ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Friday as we head into round 24 of the AFL Premiership season. And we've already packed up two teams for 2026. The Saints and the Suns are done. A key question from every game, of course, for the round ahead, as we always do. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ben Cameron's across the other side of the desk from me. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Corbin. Great to be here. We're coming to you from sunny Mackay. What a place to be. And we are counting down to the wildcard weekend and our live show. The tickets went like whooshka. They were gone. Such is the demand to come along and see ABC AFL Daily live in the flesh. The Step Brothers, Mark Murphy and Bob Murphy. So cannot wait for all of that. But yeah, a big show coming up as always.
So that's Thursday next week. When we're back in Melbourne at the Railway in Fitzroy North.
And like I wanted when we do the live show, I think I wanted us to walk off stage and then an encore chant would come back on and do a bit more. There might, given popular demand, there might be a second live show just in the works.
Okay.
Are we allowed to mention that?
No, we are. We're allowed to mention it. Speaking of popular demand, a man who's ordinarily here on a Tuesday, he will be at our live show. And given the fact that Brett Delidio is on the Big Bird over to Perth, we thought, what better than Bob Murphy once a week? Bob Murphy twice a week on the ABC AFL Daily Podcast. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Corbin. Hello, Ben. Don't waste a crisis. So Delidio out. Murphy in, soldier for soldier, play your role, know your role.
Bit of outside footy, not a lot of tackling. Is that unfair?
Hey.
Jeez.
That's scandalous.
Shots fired straight from the jump.
Ben Cameron.
We'll get to the Sydney Swans of it all. Obviously, the incredible week that it's been in the football landscape in just a moment. But we might start with Thursday night footy, given we do have some football to talk about. And what we do every Thursday is we talk about our big three things. So the first of my big three things, farewell games. So Ross Lyon spoke about this in the postscript last night with Dougal Howard obviously getting a send-off game. He said it was a love job. He also went on to say that I'm glad we did it. It probably didn't help in some respects, which I thought was an interesting line for Ross to roll out there, but they got Dougal Howard from 99 to 100 games. Nick Holman also played, kicked a couple of goals in what is his last match. Is it good for football, Ben? I'm happy to come to you first on this. Is first of our big three things is, do we like farewell games in round 24?
Oh, I think so. I think there is a cultural benefit to rewarding someone who has served the club particularly well. And we've seen that with Dion Prestia, who went across to Richmond and served them so well in multiple premierships, to give him a farewell game. I know that Bob will come with me on this, because football is not just about winning and losing, Bob. It's about the romance of the game, the beauty of it all, and the cultural fabric that it brings with it. You agree with me, don't you?
I disagree. I'm more of a hard line. Just football accounting. It's about wins and losses. No, Ben. As much as I like to take the counter to you on most occasions, I think it's something it's a nice element of our game, and I do think our game lends itself to having a bit of a longer leg rope for it. 23 players, having a player play, it's not like cricket. I think the influence one player can have. I think in these situations it lends itself to shedding a light on what is important, about exactly what Ben said about, servants of the club and the game.
There is a real recognition from players that, look, if I serve the club well, I'll be looked after on the way out. And they notice that, the guys at the early part of their career, when they see this with Dougal.
Ben King was pretty emotional last night as well. Looks like he's played his last game for the Gold Coast Suns. Obviously, he's a free agent, and even the commentary from Damien Hardwick and around the Suns suggests that he will be departing shortly. Just on Damien Hardwick, second of our big three things. Said again last night post-game that the team's going back up, that it feels like Damien Hardwick has convinced himself that this is the blip year where they've gone back down and they're going to return back to the finals contention next year. He said, look, we fell short of expectation. There's going to be a quick bounce. We're looking forward to getting back to where we need to be next year. Are you convinced, Bob, that they're going back up in 2027?
Is this Damien Hardwick's version of the Paul Keating quote of the recession we had to have? Is this his version of that? I don't know if I would use the phrase convinced Corbyn, but there's a fair bit of evidence in history of sporting teams that have built, dipped, and then gone again. They will be a really difficult ladder prediction come February next year.
Yeah.
And so, just on the Ben King, I'm sort of bummed out by, I mean, we now fully expect him to leave. I'm really kind of bummed out about that. It just feels like, because I feel like, and I've said this a couple of times to Corbyn, I think, I feel like the Gold Coast Suns were a footy club for about 18 months and now they're back to being a franchise. And just these big key position players that they invest so much time, so much money into, and then they just leave. And I just think, I feel like the competition is ever so slightly diminished because of another big key forward exodus at Gold Coast.
And it feels like there's going to be a watch on Raoul and Anderson for next year as well.
And the third of our big three things, the NRL outdrawing the AFL last night in Melbourne. So 17,780 at Amy Park for the Storm and the Panthers, while over at Docklands just 14,429 for the Saints and the Gold Coast Suns. Big deal or no big deal?
Oh, I'd say no big deal, because I would say the AFL would be able to argue that there would be multiple occasions where the Sydney Swans on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday have outdrawn the games at Brookvale or the old Olympic Stadium or Leichhardt Oval or whatever it is. So they would be able to make that argument. But I don't think it's great, Bob. It's less than ideal.
I don't think it's nothing. Is it a big deal? It's something. I feel like that's not insignificant.
Yeah, they could have
not insignificant.
They could have gone one way or the other on this fixture. Remember, Melbourne and the Western Bulldogs were pushing for it. They decided to give it to the Saints because they felt like they backed St Kilda in that they were going to be a team with wildcard ramifications. I think it's pretty hard to argue they got that one wrong. If it was a 50-50 call, we would have rather watched the D's and the Bulldogs last night than what we got.
Do you know what it does remind
me? The Saints let us down again.
Do you know what it does remind me of, Corbyn? So for anyone who's heard the Drew Morford story, the Drew Morford ODI the next day, there were more people at the Perth Wildcats down the road at Perth Arena than there were at the ODI that day.
I remember
thinking at the time, I never thought I would see the day where the NBL had a bigger crowd than Australia playing an international cricket match in the same city. And yet we saw that on that day. And this sort of reminds me a little bit of that.
The Suns won the game of footy for whatever it's worth. So 37 and a goal for Noel Randerson. Matt Rowe had 28 and 11 clearances. Took Miller had 40, 25 by halftime. And John Noble put up 42. And hats off to Bradley Hill, who's been one of my favourites for many years. 42 disposals in his 300th game. So broke a record. Tyson Edwards, the only other man to have 40 in his 300th game. He had 41 way back in 2009 at a nice touch with Sonny Walters presenting his jumper. Quick little question, bonus question for you, Bob, on the way out. What club did Brad Hill play his best football at?
Gee, that's a good question. I mean, it's probably Hawthorn.
See, I disagree. But, I would say
it's close to now.
Yeah. I'm the third of those options. I feel like he's 54 games at Fremantle. He was like squint and he was like top 15 in the game. Like he was phenomenal. Won a best and fairest. And yet he hardly played there in the long run. He played the most games for St Kilda. He played the second most for Hawthorn, where obviously he won all the flags. And then he only played 54 games at Fremantle. But I thought he was unbelievable in his short stay at the Dockers.
In my mind's eye, I don't have a strong memory of his Fremantle days, I've got to say. It's a bit of a blank spot for me.
Well, they weren't sort of uber successful years, were they? It was sort of post the run that they had, and obviously minor premiers in 2015, the grand final and everything else. But ninth First Nations player to get there, you can clearly see what a leader he is in the community. So what on to him.
I think his year this year, I think he's been phenomenal.
He has been. Yeah. He has been. To the serious events of the week, the Sydney Swans scandal. So as we've tried to do right throughout our reporting of this, obviously we try to place the alleged victim at the centre of this. I understand, you know, it must be a very distressing time, and that the saturation of the media coverage around it can't help all that much. We obviously have seen reports in the last 24 hours that have come out through the News Corp papers where one of the women involved have told their version of events of what's happened on that night. The broader societal issue, which we've emphasised throughout the week, one in five women have experienced sexual violence, which is just frightening numbers. Very deliberately on this show, we're going to put all of that to one side. There's a police investigation that's obviously ongoing at the moment, so that is in the hands of Victoria Police. The football side of it, and obviously what we learnt this week, is that there are sanctions handed down for five players who have been connected to this story. So Riley Bice, Nick Blakey, Isaac Heaney, James Jordan, and Chad Warner have all been suspended for the remainder of the 2026 season. Andrew Pridham, the president of the football club, came out and spoke about the fact that they've effectively torpedoed their season to show how seriously that they are taking this matter. Matthew Pavlich said they're deeply embarrassed and ashamed. He also spoke about the impact on the women involved. But the biggest names, Bob, sidelined for the climax of the 2026 season, and obviously means the Swans impacted on field, but this is a story which you feel like is going to reverberate for a long period of time. But as a jumping off point, are the sanctions appropriate?
Well, the pure football sanctions have been accepted as appropriate in the court of public opinion.
Yeah.
It's probably as hard as they could have gone, which in and of itself is not insignificant either. I mean, for example, I didn't even know that players being ineligible for the All-Australian was something that could actually be handed down. So it was a precedent for the type of sanctions and just how serious that Sydney have taken it, and the statement that they wanted to make about all of the issues that are surrounding it, not just the ones that have played out in public.
Yeah, I think it's been an illuminating week for me. Like, I wasn't aware of the 1 in 5 numbers. I found that pretty shocking, to be honest. Like,
devastating.
Yeah, really, really upsetting. And I was just unaware of it. So I think it's given men, hopefully, who are involved in often sporting clubs and whatnot, a little bit of cause for pause as to things you need to call out, how you need to behave in certain ways to ensure that this doesn't fester and compound to situations like this. And particularly as a father of a young kid, like, I've spent a lot of the week reflecting, how do I raise my son to ensure that he is acutely aware of the way that he needs to behave and treat women appropriately and respectfully. So that's how I've looked a lot at the week. And then the other part, which jumps off the page to me, is reading Brandon Jack's book 28. So the way he discussed drinking and the relationship with alcohol when he was at the Sydney Swans from 2013 to 2017 sort of sprung back into my mind this week a little bit.
Mm. Did either of you see the Kieran Jack statement that he posted publicly? Yeah, I mean, that was pretty insightful as well about, you know, how he was, you know, referring to the Bloods culture, of which he's a, you know, obviously lived and breathed, and how far this is from that, and now is the time to stand up and not be silent. It was really, really powerful. I'm interested by both your thoughts, but I can't think of a story in football that has put up a mirror to the locker room culture, to the corporate AFL culture. So I'm talking about, you know, CEOs of clubs and the league, and also the football media at the same time, around the way this issue has been discussed, the language, the phrasing, the accountability, the who's talking, who's quiet, the gender politics around it. It's just, and it hasn't dimmed as the week has gone. We're Friday now, and it is still as feverishly interested, you know, people, it's captivated people's attention. As unpleasant as it is for all of us, but it has.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know we talk a lot about social issues, probably more on this podcast than a lot of other, you know, footy shows. But I feel like for a long period of time, and I'm someone that loves my history, and certainly, you know, these great sporting activists throughout history and the role that they've played. But yeah, we're long removed from that, and I've often said that, you know, sport no longer promotes social change, it reflects it. So basically, sport is now, you know, catching up or riding the wave of the rest of society rather than creating the wave. We don't have those athletes anymore that, unfortunately, we did have throughout history that were real social change leaders. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is exactly what you've said there this week, that this is a reflection of how people, I think, feel in society. And if anything, in the past, we've sort of been, we almost preempt or we're ready for the AFL, or we expect them to turn a blind eye and a deaf ear to some things, and the game always comes first, and how can they weave their way through it? This week felt like, in society, we don't stand for this anymore because of those numbers that you speak about. You know, everybody has important women in their lives, and they have the absolute right to feel safe. And so we're all on a steep learning curve. I thought Ben spoke so well a moment ago. That's probably very similar to how I felt this week as well, that it was, you know, how we probably covered at the start of the week to the end of the week, you know, what happens when these issues arise again, and being able to learn a lot from going through such an episode. So I was surprised at how strong the game was. When you think about, you know, find out on Monday, Tuesday interview the players, Wednesday come out and announce, hey, there's sanction for this level of behaviour, and then obviously that doesn't, you know, prejudice the Victoria Police investigation, which is going to go on from that point on. So I think there's a few of us, Bob, that have been around the game for a while where we thought, well, this is actually a step forward in the way that the game handles some of these issues. And obviously, there's still so much of, you know, what's at the heart of it that is still going to unfold and be played out by Victoria Police.
Yeah, and we're at pains, I think. I think I can speak on behalf of you two as well. We're at pains to not move away from the core issue here and the core of the allegations and the situation. So we don't want to move too far away from that, but I do think, as unpleasant as this week has been, if you look at it from an angle of, well, how would the game have handled this 30 years ago, 20
yes,
years ago,
100%.
10 years ago to this week, that cliche of progress isn't linear. Like, it's devastating this week for lots of reasons. But within it all, I do think that it may be a turning point for good for the game and for the people who love the game.
I agree with that. Even 5 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever it was, it felt like a huge turning point for the league and its media and how we cover it. Absolutely. Can the Five play together again, Bob? It's obviously, if nothing, again, putting, the investigation obviously with Victoria Police to one side, but these are five players that their actions alone, and this is what we know at this stage, just leading up to the particular episode, have led to them being suspended for the rest of the season. I imagine that would be so tough for those guys to walk back into that locker room again.
What are we, 5 days since it became public and 5 days really since it all went down? As I sit here now, I can't imagine them playing again, all five certainly. If any of them, not sure. But it is so, still so relatively fresh. It just seems like it's so devastating to the Sydney Swans club and culture.
And the culture is a fascinating talking point, that the Bloods culture, and you mentioned the Kieran Jack post. So I saw a lot of praise for Sydney that was essentially, well done to them in how they've handled it and they've protected their culture and ultimately they've, done the right thing. I guess the question is, was their culture that strong to begin with? And I feel like nothing happens in isolation, that these things sort of fester and all of a sudden unfold. And I think for those of us that have been around footy, we've heard stories out of Sydney that, hey, that the guys have a pretty good time up there and it is different than what happens in Melbourne. And then all of a sudden it leads us to this particular episode. So I'd imagine, Bob, and you're a culture guy in footy, as we touched on off the top, this is going to lead to a huge rethink, I'm sure, as to how they got here, how they went from the 2005 team to 21 years later being in the position that they're in.
Well, gee, there's a bunch of lessons out of this. But the one that is ringing very loudly in the football sense, not referring to the police investigation itself, is that culture is fluid and it's not a tattoo.
Yeah.
It's not permanent. It's constantly in flux and you need to treat it with absolute respect and with real tenderness, because it can be crushed in a moment.
Just before we move on too, I just wanted to play the voices of a couple of very respected women in the industry, in Daisy Pearce and Kate McCarthy, who both spoke about this issue during the week. First of all, Daisy Pearce at her press conference, obviously as the coach of the West Coast Eagles women's team, followed by Kate McCarthy on the Agenda Setters back on Wednesday night on Channel 7.
What message do you have to young men who might be doing these sort of behavioural things, which are awful?
Be a good human. Be a good human. And then for those that are in high-profile positions, understand that you being a good human matters, but it also has a massive impact on what other people think is acceptable as well.
Yeah, I just think the coverage of this issue does welcome a conversation that people are maybe a little bit too afraid to have because of how sensitive it is. But the reality of this situation is there is an epidemic of violence against women in this country. There is. One in five women have experienced sexual violence at some point in their life in Australia. And I think leading with a story like this and reporting to start with, and this is early hours of this breaking, some news outlets going with just the ramifications on the Sydney Swans as a football club, I think it opened a conversation to have around gender-based violence, which is an issue in our country. It's an issue culturally. And I think widely we are seeing that there is an issue within AFL football with the treatment of women and the way in which women are regarded in our game. And I think that's an important conversation to have in this. And I know it's not a comfortable conversation, but it's one that women are very tired of having. And this opens the conversation for people that may not have thought of that or it hasn't affected them. And now it has. And it's time to speak about these things, because if we don't speak about it, nothing changes. And Tom, nothing against how you reported either, because you're a journalist who's on the spot. You report what you can confirm. And I agree that at first you went with an incident because it was an incident
to
you.
Yeah.
There was nothing confirmed from that point. And I think then as soon as it came to light that it was more than that, you rephrased your wording. I think once that had come to light, though, that needed to be reported by other outlets as what this was. Not how is Sydney going to win the premiership? Because this is not about that. There is so much more at play. And yes, we will get into the other ramifications of that from a footballing lens. But that conversation happening first was so much more important than how are we going to win the flag now.
And just recapping too, as Bob mentioned, that the guys won't be considered for the All-Australian team. So Isaac Heaney, number one rated player in the game, according to Champion Data. Four of the five that were suspended were top seven in last year's best and fairest for the Sydney Swans. All right, into the games. The Sydney Swans obviously find themselves in a matchup against North Melbourne. The Swans are now a slight underdog in this game, such have been the changes that unfolded here. Interestingly, the Swans hold a long winning streak over North Melbourne, so an opportunity for the Roos to try and snap that. It's going to be, I imagine, a pretty uncomfortable afternoon at the footy. There's the women's game that will happen beforehand, and then obviously the Sydney Swans will, or what's left of them, will roll out to play North Melbourne in the afternoon slot. The footy tonight, Collingwood up against the Brisbane Lions, so the Pies here haven't rested en masse as many predicted. Should Nick Daicos be playing tonight?
Well, there six players were managed over the course of the week, Corbin, so we didn't get the mass restings like Greg Swan feared, like many of us feared, heading into this final game before the wildcard weekend.
Six players across the competition
managed.
Managed, wow.
Yeah. So Fremantle had three. There were six that were listed as managed. Maybe there's a couple of others that have been listed as an injury that's maybe really just them being managed, but... Bob, should Nick have been rested?
Nick's a young fella. He likes playing football. I think he wants to win the Brownlow.
He's got a record to break in the Brownlow.
Exactly. Now, I if he's feeling healthy enough, keep playing, keep rolling along.
Oh, I'm probably a rest.
Jack Crisp was always going to play, wasn't he?
Yeah.
What
about Jack Crisp?
He wouldn't know how to rest. If Jack Crisp rested, he'd probably get injured.
Yeah.
What about, it is his 285th consecutive game. Can he get to 300
unbelievable.
Straight?
That's insane, isn't it? It's insane. So here's one that we've asked a couple of times throughout the year. I don't know if we put it to you, Bob. Is it more likely that Scott Pendlebury's record gets broken or Jack Crisp's record?
It's more likely Pendlebury's record will get broken.
Well, yeah.
I think that's probably right. I think that's... We're not going to see
someone play. I didn't even hesitate. Yeah. I did not even hesitate.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can understand that. And speaking of the Brisbane Lions and great players in the competition, obviously there in Melbourne to play this game tonight, Will Ashcroft, is he put together an All-Australian year for a guy that's a two-time Norm Smith medalist? Feels like he's just been quietly going about his work.
Gee, you have to be pretty close, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
It is so hard with those midfield spots, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you go back over the All-Australian years, you look down the first midfielder who misses out each year, you think, whoa, good player, good year, but you've got to fit them all in. How do you fit them all in?
I actually think he's become underrated, mainly because of the way that he won his Norm Smith medals. So he's twice a Norm Smith medalist by the time he's 20, but he wasn't the overwhelming dominant player on the ground. He was probably the best player on the ground, and so he got both of those medals. But I feel like in the footy family that it's almost as if, you know, people look at it and think, oh, he's a two-time Norm Smith medalist. It feels like, you know, he's got too many accolades for what his output has been early in his career. And yet you only have to be the best player on the ground by a little bit to all of a sudden get those honours. And it's no fault of his. But as a result, it's almost like people feel like they need to keep the hype around him down at a young age.
I have a clearer picture of Peter Matera's Norm Smith.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah,
all those years ago where I'm like, I can remember that day where he was just so far and away the best player on that ground. It was so spectacular and memorable. Whereas, like you say, Will Ashcroft, totally deserving, but it was more death by a thousand cuts.
And not to be glib about it, but there might be an extra midfield slot maybe to in the All-Australian team, which might be the difference between Will making it and not making it. His first 100 games, like, would you prefer them to Nick Dacos? He hasn't got to 100 games just yet, but he's twice a Norm Smith medalist. Nick's won a premiership. He hasn't won a Brownlow medal yet. That might change after 100 games, but that's just one to ponder on the way through as well.
All right, Saturday footy, Carlton up against Fremantle. How should the Blues approach this game, Murph? So there is still the option for them here that if they win, they could move up to ninth and potentially avoid a trip to Adelaide, or they try and just keep a little bit of juice in the tank and stay fresh for a wild card game against the Crows.
Corbin, don't. This is where your intelligence gets in the way. you could potentially trip yourself up. I know where you're going with this. I can see you leading me. Take yourself back to the Michael Voss Blues, where they would get a lead and then they would start to what? They'd start to think, then they'd start to overthink. And that's what you're doing right now. If the Blues start doing that, they'll trip themselves up. Don't overcomplicate it.
See ball.
Simplify.
See ball, get ball.
We have a game of football. Yep. Anytime we step out onto that green stuff, we just try and beat whoever's in front of us.
Quick question before we move on from this game. Who would Fremantle least like to see on grand final day, Bob?
Least like to play on grand final day?
Yep.
Hawthorn.
Oh, wow. Gee, you're a Hawthorn loyalist.
Yeah. Jeez. Hawthorn have beaten one top 10 team since round 5, Bob. I've been trying to tell you this.
Don't throw stats at me, Ben. I'm not interested. This is tainted with Western Australian loaded gun. This is all about Vic bias. I hear it.
Brisbane for me.
Brisbane for me as well.
Probably, you know, as soon as... Now I'm going to flip-flop. Probably Brisbane.
Josh Fraser, by the way, is on AFL Saturday. So you can catch that right here through ABC AFL Daily on Saturday. Melbourne and the Western Bulldogs. How do the Ds cover Jacob Van Rooyen? So, gee, this is untimely. He gets a 3-game suspension. They tried to take it all the way. Went to the appeals board last night. Failed there too. So he's going to miss 2 finals should Melbourne play in a couple. Obviously, that's still to be determined. But he's going to miss this weekend and he's got 2 more to serve thereafter. How do they cover him, Bob?
Geez, that's a tough assignment. You know how I feel about Brody Mychek and the Demons have been incredible without him. But I was always of the view that he was potentially the most valuable Demon, Brody Mychek, because MVD. Structurally of what he allowed the Demons to do. Jacob Van Rooyen, in Brody's absence, he probably steps into all... He's not their best player, but he's so valuable to them. So to now lose him as well, far out, a lot of responsibility goes to Harrison Petty, who is a utility. You know, he can bob up, but he's not an absolute genuine key forward. But the best version of Harrison Petty is what the Demons need.
Just on JVR, so in their 7 losses this year, he's booted 5 goals, and in their 15 wins, he's kicked 35. So that does point to a difficulty without him. Just on Xavier Lindsay comes in for him, not a like for like, but one we've forgotten about a little bit. Pick 11 in 2024, played the first 5 games this year before groin soreness, saw him out last to win the VFL, comes back in. Bob and I have done a lot of the Ds. We love Harvey Langford. We love Caleb Windsor, Colton Tolstrup, or Coltol, as we call him, Matthew Jefferson.
Carl Chandler,
But don't forget and don't be sleeping on Xavier Lindsay as well.
Okay. The D's, by the way, 10-1 at the G, 5-6 elsewhere. They're back at the G against the Western Bulldogs on Saturday. Geelong up against Richmond. Are the Tigers improving, Bob?
Okay. Like shades, pretty low bar.
Yep.
Pretty low bar. We need it. The Tigers need a control, alt, delete, reset. Big, you know, preseason health.
Yep.
Reload. Then we'll see who they are.
Interesting. Adamuze, after the loss last week, said he was really, really disappointed. Said they were outworked, outplayed, smashed in a lot of areas we've been strong in. It was really embarrassing. He said we've got to be really honest and live with that, talking about the fact that they didn't put in the showing they wanted for their two retiring players in Dion Prestia and Nathan Broad. Also, the language around Dion Prestia is interesting. So the club keeps saying retiring and that they want to retire one of their three-time premiership stars. He's basically saying, hey, I'm open for business. If anyone's got a list spot for me, I'm happy to go to one of the other 17 clubs and try to find potentially a third team in the competition. Adelaide up against GWS.
Yeah, is this Toby Green's last outing as a Giant, Bob?
Well, it may well be. What a time that we live in where captains of clubs just regularly leave. It's bizarre, isn't it? We talked about this, I think, during the year, Corbin, around how it went from such a rarity to, in the last couple of years, just being now quite common. So I'm still trying to wrap my brain around it. I just had placed him as a Giant for life. So it's kind of, it has sort of caught me off guard all year that Toby Green could actually play anywhere else, but it may well turn out that way.
It does feel like a two-club player is the new one-club player, a three-club player is the new two-club player, and so on from there. But Jake Stringer has confirmed that this will likely be his last game for GWS, linked with the move potentially to Collingwood or somewhere else. Jesse Hogan the same. Six-year stint at GWS expected to come to an end. Some of the four-club players in the comp, let's start with Dale Kickett, who played at 5.
Yes.
This is in the AFL era. So Fitzroy, West Coast, St Kilda, Essendon, Fremantle. Have you got some of the other four-club players for me, gents?
Ben Hudson.
Ben Hudson is one of them. Your old mate at the Doggies.
Yeah.
There's a father of a pretty good player at the moment. It runs around for Brisbane. Adrian Fletcher. Jacob Townsend.
Yep.
Fletcher.
Do you want the full list? Yep. Justin Murphy.
Yeah.
Martin Pike. Richard Osborne. Scotty Cummings. Simon Minton Connell.
Yep.
Stuart Wigney. And Tom Hickey is the most recent of them, I think.
Long time.
Tom Hickey.
Yep, long time. Gold Coast, St Kilda, West Coast and Sydney.
There's a couple of guys there, I saw your eyes go up too, Bob, when Justin Murphy's name got mentioned. There's a couple of guys there where I associate only with one club, and yet they're four club players. Yeah.
Wow. Stuart Wigney. I'm glad that we got Stuart Wigney's name mentioned on this podcast.
Yep.
A fine man. Fine Gippslander.
It's a bit unusual. It's round 24 that's the first mention of the year, but hey, well done. Also, while we're in round 24, I have a fixture gripe. So this is actually cause for celebration. This is fixture gripe 2,650 for the year. So a nice little milestone of gripes in the media. So we have three games this weekend where teams are playing each other for the first time. Yep. But if you're an aficionado about the history and the rivalry of the Adelaide and GWS head-to-head matchups, there's very few people, I'm sure, that would have much interest in this. But if you are, these teams have had their last three meetings at Adelaide Oval, 7 of their last 8, and 11 of their last 13. So over the last decade, GWS has only played 2 home games against the Crows. This is at Adelaide Oval again. So they hosted Adelaide at the Showground in 2023 and then in Canberra in 2018. So basically, out of their last 13 meetings, 11 of them have been at Adelaide Oval. Like, I get that the fixture's difficult, but surely if you're playing a team home one year, you play them away the next or whatever it turns out to be. For a decade, this game's almost exclusively been in Adelaide. It's just bizarre the way
works. Is that an anomaly, or is that something that
that's pretty weird
considered when they put the fixture together of history?
That's pretty rare. Do you know what
that's
I think?
Very lopsided.
I mean, it's great for GWS fans in Adelaide, but it's terrible for all those Western Sydney hardcore Adelaide Crows fans, the people that live out in the west of Sydney that don't get to see their team play in that neck of the woods.
People linked to James Peatling. It's very confusing.
Correct. All right, Sunday footy, Essendon up against Port Adelaide. It's not the end of the season that we thought it was going to be, obviously, given the fact that the top 10 is already decided. But the Bombers are obviously the talking point here up against Port Adelaide, especially now that Zach Butters isn't playing. So he did make that last ditch attempt, but ultimately he's not going to get there. Why would the Bombers delay their coaching announcement? Murph? Is this highlighted?
Stop asking me direct questions about Essendon, because you know, Corbin,
you don't have any idea.
Absolute, it's a mystery box challenge. Yep. We have no idea. The only thing I can gather, and I think it's the populist opinion, is that it's going to be McVay, and can they convince James Hurd? That's where I have sort of landed on it. Or do you delay it because the president's away or Carlton have announced their coach? I just don't know.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it's the other two, that it's either Graham or it's Davis, and maybe because they've got a week off heading into the top six, maybe not in Davis's case, given Sydney's playing, Adelaide could fall into that spot, that maybe there's a little bit of clear air there that, hey, I'm going to be in Melbourne anyway, team's playing over there, we'll stick around, we'll do the announcement at the start of the week, then I can go back to my club and get ready for finals or whatever, and I'll see you all in the start of October. But whoever it is and whatever decision they've made, I'm not so sure they've announced it to anyone yet because it hasn't leaked. They've been able to keep it pretty well under wraps.
Is it because they don't want an uprising at their last match if it's not James Hurd?
I actually thought there would be more of that than what there has been. It felt like in the first 24 hours it was like a volcano. And then since then, there's the odd person that brings a little A4 piece of paper that says, bring back Hurd or whatever. But I would hardly say there's been a huge, overwhelming groundswell of support for him. If anything, numbers have dwindled away, and the Bombers fans are in the worst place you could possibly be, which is that they just have lost all care completely.
Do you think they're just exhausted? It was just so long. It was just hard to keep the pots boiling for that long.
Yeah.
It's like the Lumineers said so poetically, Corbin.
Yes.
The opposite of love is indifference.
Yep. And then unfortunately, that's where Essendon fans are. That the Essendon should want their supporter base to be angry, because the problem is when they're not angry, they're not engaged, and that's where they're at the moment. Because there's nothing to be happy about. That emotion's off the table. I can tell you that for sure. Obviously, we know Sydney are going to play North Melbourne. That's the middle game on the Sunday, and then the late game, West Coast up against Hawthorn. Has this game become the most consequential match of the weekend? The reason for that, Bob, is the Hawks, who you believe in so much, could be playing for third spot because they will know the percentage that they need to chase.
Well, it probably is. It probably is the most consequential, and the week that's transpired has only made that even more so. Of a game that at the start of the year you probably didn't think would have much juice to it. It could have huge, huge ramifications.
Yeah, I mean, clearly there's far more serious things at play, but that this third place is now a coveted position given what Sydney are going to look like. Just to give people a rough idea, if Brisbane and Collingwood play a close game, let's say a handful of points, if Hawthorn can then win by, say, 60 points, like a match 110 to 50, that would be enough percentage for them to go past Brisbane likely. So that's not unforeseeable given it's a West Coast team with nothing to play for, half a foot in Bali, on holidays at the end of the year, or Europe, wherever they go these days. I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility.
I like the Bali link, given the West Coast Eagles. And it's I always say Bali's just a northern suburb of Perth. It's amazing the amount of people that spend their time in Bali. Just on Jack Gunston too, so we shouted out Bradley Hill off the top. 114th player to get to 300 games. When he debuted in 2010, only 62 had got to the 300-game milestone. So what's that? In the last 16 years, almost 50 players, or over 50 players have brought up 300 games. What I love is they put these emails out. Patrick Keane, who's got all these great stats on the players, and most people just sort of scroll through and go, yep, well done, and off they go. I'm the nerd that sits there and reads every single stat, and I look for the most obscure number that I can possibly find. So here's one. Between 2012 and 2014, in the 50-game period, he went 42-8. Imagine playing 50 games and you lose 8 of them over a period of time, which is phenomenal. And then it gets even better. The next dot point, I just looked down. Kicked 12 goals in grand finals called by Bruce McAvaney, the most of any player. What a stat that is. I'd love to see the complete list maybe added to AFL tables or something like that. But
that's fantastic.
Yeah, good.
That's great. What a great player.
AFLW this weekend, I mentioned the Swans are playing a doubleheader. So they're playing different teams, though. So North Melbourne, obviously, for the men's side. The women play Essendon on Sunday. The rest of the weekend, just to take you through it. So Saturday, the Dogs up against the Tigers. Pair of 1-0 teams there. Pair of 0-1 teams when the Eagles take on the Suns at Lathlane. Geelong up against St Kilda. Both teams lost first up there as well. And then Brisbane and North Melbourne is the standout here. So the grand final rematch.
Sheesh.
Lions off an 8-goal win against Essendon. North have won 28 straight. They haven't lost in over 2 years, so let's see what we get on Saturday there. The Lions up against the Roos.
Quick bonus question for you, Corbin.
Yep.
Which streak ends first? North Melbourne's winning streak or Marnus Labuschagne's Test Century drought?
Oh, that's a question. Marnie's. He's going to get one this week, I think. I've got my fingers crossed for him. Sydney up against Essendon at the SCG. So, as I said, that's the double header. They had a win first up the Swans last week for Colin O'Riordan. First game in charge. Pies take on the Dockers at Victoria Park. Both teams lost first up. Ruby Schleicher, though, had a little goal of the year contender, if you haven't seen that from week one. Worth checking out. The Peter Dacos effort from the pocket. D's take on the Giants out at Casey. We've got Carlton and Adelaide at Princes Park. And then to complete the weekend, it is Port Adelaide and Hawthorn. So that's the late game at Alberton on Sunday. The Superdog time, before we go, almost forgot on the way out. I know you love Superdog, Bob. You listen to this pod every week on a Friday to look ahead to the weekend ahead. What we essentially need to do is we need to find an underdog. And if you can find the underdog and they're able to get within the particular head start that you get 5 points. If the team wins outright, so they actually win the game despite being a four-goal underdog, you get the 5 points. But you also get whatever the winning margin is. So they win by 13 points, you get 18. They win by 40 points, you get 45. And so the leaderboard goes up and down as the season goes on. So I'm leading the way on 159. Thank you. 119 for Ben and 105 for Brett Delidio. Now, last week we did have two covers. So Ben, you took the Pies with a 19-point head start and you went to 119. So well done there. And Brett Delidio took North Melbourne, who also covered in their game up against the Cats. I took the Crows, who were looking like good things against the Dockers and ultimately lost by 24 points. Here's the advantages as we go through the weekend. Collingwood are getting 25 points up against the Brisbane Lions. The Blues with a 10-point head start against the Dockers. The Bulldogs, 16-point head start against Melbourne. Richmond are getting a 10-goal head start against Geelong. GWS with 25-point head start against Adelaide. The Bombers get 10 points against Port Adelaide. And for the West Coast Eagles, you're getting a 46-point head start against the Hawks. Now, Brett Delidio is going the Giants. So he's taking the Giants there with a 25-point head start against Adelaide. You got one for us, Bob?
Well, I was sitting in Brett Delidio's chair, and I also was going to go for the Giants. Is that okay?
Yep. I'm happy to put you down for the G-Man.
I will take the Western Bulldogs.
Ooh, okay.
We did the game between these two teams earlier on in the year, and it was a bit closer. I know the MCG changes it a bit, but I'll take the Doggies.
And I'll take the Blues. The Baggers with the 10 points up against the Dockers on Saturday afternoon. Docklands Freo got, well, they've managed three, haven't they? So Amos, Switkowski, and a third name, Chapman, that are going to have missed the trip to Melbourne.
Can I just say as well on the way out, a special congratulations to my close and personal friends, Marcus and Neela, on the arrival of their beautiful daughter, Daisy.
Right. Congratulations to them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you've just seen their dog, of course, that's running around the tent.
And just on the back of what Ben Cameron has just beautifully put there, I'd also just like to shout out my dear friend Malcolm Blight. Just want to say hello to Malcolm if he's listening. Wanted to say hello.
I was about to say, don't try and make it out as if you know Marcus Bontempelli as well as Ben or anything like that, Bob.
Bob, I was actually thinking of Blighty this week because in his eternal wisdom...
Well, like every other week,
in his eternal wisdom, he had a curfew when he was coach. Do you know what it was?
What's that?
12-ish. So he was like, if you got home at 12:09...
That's great.
You haven't broken curfew, but if you get home at 12:40, you have. And that 12-ish curfew would have served the Sydney Swans really well in this last week. So I thought of Blighty this week.
I believe that is the definition of an oxymoron.
Yeah.
12-ish.
Thanks, Bob. Love your work.
Great hit out, Bob. I'll chat to you again on Tuesday.
Thanks, guys.
Bob Murphy, full preview of the weekend right here on ABC AFL Daily. Now, Ben, we're up in Mackay. We're on cricket duties. So that means on Saturday, Clint Wildham will be in the chair for AFL Saturday. Josh Fraser's feature guest. You'll hear from Mick Mouldhouse and Luke Ball as always. You'll be back on Sunday with Daniel Harford. And then Monday, who knows if we're there or not. It'll depend a little bit on the cricket. But stay close. You'll still get plenty of footy coverage right here through ABC AFL Daily.